Today is lesson 5 from the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. now, previously we left off, we didn't quite complete the last few slokas. We got up to about 49. We didn't quite get to 55, so we'll just recap some of those points. We spent a lot of time discussing the different qualities of the brahmanas, chachas, vaishyas and sutras. And hopefully we've got a good understanding of their qualities. so, now, in text number 45, after discussing those qualities, Krishna described that by following his qualities of work, every man can become perfect. He says, now please hear from me how this can be done. By worship of the Lord, who is the source of all beings and who is all-pervading, a man can attain perfection through performing his own work. So it has been described that in the Varnashram system every person is employed. There is no one who is unemployed. So that is Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, and everyone is engaged according to the qualities by the modes of material nature. Yet, Krishna is saying that if they perform their work in worshipping the Lord, then they all become perfect. So that is the perfect system. Everyone in society is working towards the same consciousness, the same understanding according to their level. So you see that expertise of Krishna, that even though people are on different levels and they may have different understandings, as we've seen, people in the mode of ignorance tend to have a particular type of understanding, and therefore they may be prone to worship a particular type of deity despite their understanding, despite their inclinations. They're still guided in another way towards Krishna consciousness. So even though for instance when you know, the educational system, when you know they go to primary school or even secondary school, they may have their own different concepts of what, how they should be educated and what they should be doing in life, but the educational system is, despite that, despite their inclinations, understanding, level of knowledge, the educational system still takes them in the one direction. Right? Generally. So society is like that. The Vedic society, and that means there must be someone who heads the society who understands the direction. The others, of course, will not. Those in the modes of passion, you know, and ignorance certainly will not. The brahmanas, it is up to them to understand knowledge. What is God? What is the self? What is duty? What is religion? What is not religion? The brahmanas are supposed to know that, jnanam and vijnanam. They practice that themselves and teach it to society. Without brahmanas, then what happens, of course, is that because there's no common direction in society, then according to their different inclinations and according to their different understandings, everyone is going in a different direction. That is what we have in our society, because there's no Brahmanist leader. And that becomes chaotic because they're all working against each other, thinking that their direction is the all in all. And therefore they fight against each other. So, you know, you have the communists who represent the labourers. They fight against the capitalists who represent the vices. Like that. In this way. Whereas, in Vedic society, the labourers and the capitalists work hand in hand together for a common goal. So we're not against the labor, you know, the socialists who work for the try to get, you know, proper quality of life for the labor class. We're not against the capitalists. We're not against the communists. All of them, if they just have a God-centered capitalism, communism, socialism, then they become perfect and they can all work hand in hand instead of fighting against each other. So this is the so in that way it becomes perfect because society is perfect. So as a whole social body, it is that they are perfect and happy, and as individuals, even though they may not have the proper understanding or proper inclination, they're still being carried forward despite that in the proper direction, and that direction is towards the Supreme Lord, towards going back to Godhead, towards not taking another birth in this material world, but again, you know, actually the whole Vedic system is geared towards helping one that they don't have to take another birth in this world and that they can actually return to the spiritual world. That's the whole Vedic system. And everyone has that opportunity, whether they're, you know, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras, or others. So all of them have that sense that I'm doing my work. And I am hoping that the work that I am doing as a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra is satisfying the Lord. Each and every one of them has that understanding. Even the Sudras, they have that understanding. According to the, you know, their levels of knowledge, they may have different levels of, you know, profound realization of the Supreme Lord and their own spiritual nature and what have you. But even the common man, has that basic understanding. I'm a spiritual being. I'm not this body, I am meant to work for the Supreme Lord. So, in a Vedic society, and we see that, you know, even in India, as Prabhupada many times points out, that the Indian people are naturally Krishna conscious. You know, the average person has that understanding that I am spiritual by nature and I'm meant to satisfy the Lord. You know, the average person, whether they're Sudras or less, they have that. So everyone in society, so we see that even now, what to speak of in a, you know, a Vedic culture. They all have that understanding, but to different degrees of realization. So, now, in text 47 to 48, Krishna explains that it's actually better to do one's own work rather than another's. Every endeavour has some sort of fault, every type of work. One should not give up his own work. And he describes that just as fire is covered by smoke, that is the analogy which he uses. So we discussed that, you know, sometimes the Vaishyas, they may have to tell a lie that is part of, you know, it's almost impossible to make a profit if we don't sort of, you know, try and convince the others that we're not making a profit, and, you know, we're really working for their benefit, not for our own profit. So there's some misleading, there's some lies and what have you. But still, there's no sin incurred for the Vaishya in doing that. But the the Brahmana can't imitate that, and he can't say that, oh, it's too difficult telling the truth, let me lie like the Vaishya. They have to tell the truth, even to an enemy. But there are certain activities of Brahmanas which are sometimes considered, just like Brahmanas sometimes, not in this age, but the perfect Brahmanas would offer animals and sacrifice, and there's no sin for them, and the Kshatriyas would sometimes have to kill to protect the citizens from rogues. There's no sin involved for them. So just as in fire there is smoke, but that smoke does not actually affect the purity of fire. Right? So, although, because Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Sudras work within the modes of material nature, because it's material activity, there is fault in each and every work. But there is also the fire aspect, and it is the fire aspect, or the purificatory aspect of each work, that one takes advantage of, and as one becomes more and more purified, the smoke becomes, the impurity of one's work or the smoke of the fire becomes less prevalent. See? So gradually, in another sense, you know, that analogy can be taken in many different ways. There may be more smoke or more impurities in the work of a sudra than there is in the work of a brahmana, of course, where the fire is considered to be blazing even more. Still, the interesting thing there is that smoke in itself is also purifying. Right? Because if you light a fire, it's like if we have a yagya and you light a fire, if there's a lot of smoke, it disturbs, and so you quickly want to, you know, make that fire burn brightly without smoke. So for the sudras, the smoke part, or the, say, when they actually engage in a lot more sinful activity, which they're allowed to do as sudras, but it causes a lot more stress, as we know the result of activities in the mode of ignorance cause suffering, whereas activity in the mode of goodness for the brahmanas causes happiness. So for the sudras, when they compare the amount of stress that they're going through because of the sinful activity, more impurities, they make it actually causes the effect that they want to give up that and elevate themselves, remove that impure part of their work, and they get that realization because they're all working for the Supreme, because they're actually all working for the pleasure of the Lord. The Lord actually is inspiring everyone within the heart, you know, even the sudras, how they can remove the smoky part or the impure part of their work, and then end up with the part of their work which is just the fire part of their work, the purifying part, the part which is actually dedicated just for the pleasure of the Lord, and not the part which is dedicated to, you know, sense gratification. And in this way they will make progress. So it's a very nice analogy there. And you know, that analogy, you can meditate upon that and in many, many different ways you can see, you know, the fire and the smoke is such a beautiful analogy to describe this particular section of the Bhagavatam, how one's work may be covered by fault. So, now, that actually, gradually, as we get to text number 49, where we left off last time, was that one who is self-controlled and unattached and who disregards all material enjoyments can obtain by practice of renunciation the highest perfect stage of freedom from reaction. So, now of course, here we see Krishna is saying, don't give up your work, give up the attachment to being the doer and attachment to the results of work. That's his constant theme that he's spoken on previously in the different chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, and here again. It's a very interesting point, because when we take birth, we're born into a particular body that is influenced by certain modes of material nature. And even when we become purified, we still have that body. Therefore, you see that for instance, one who is born perhaps with a strong disposition to the modes of goodness over previous lifetimes and therefore over several lifetimes they're used to operating on the intellectual platform, very thoughtful, with control of the mind and senses. That is the sort of body and mind that they naturally have. Whereas someone who may take birth, say more as the say Sudra, influenced by the mode of ignorance, even when they become purified, they may still actually keep going with the type of work that they have been accustomed to for many lifetimes. Even though their consciousness may be, you know, that of a Brahmana or even above, according to their body, though, they may still, according to their body, you know, the education that they've received in life, social stipulations, family, you know, pressures and what have you, and may still engage in that activity, yet in a higher consciousness. for instance, so you see that although one becomes purified, comes to the level, understand that they're, you know, spiritual by nature, and they become detached to the fruits of work, detached from the concept of being the doer, but they still may, according to various circumstances, act in any of those particular varnas, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra. Sometimes that, you know, they may change from someone who is but the impetus to change one's occupation is that which is helps them to remain in a purified state of consciousness and to make progress, especially in Krishna consciousness. So if someone is, for instance, doing a particular type of activity as a businessman, as a Vaishya, and then when they become Krishna conscious, if that situation is very conducive for a peaceful life and it allows them to maintain their body and soul together, and at the same time continue to purify their transcendental consciousness, there's no real need for them to stop being a Vaishya and actually become take up the activities of a Brahmana. And considering the particular body, psychophysical nature which one has, developed over many lifetimes, they're sometimes more naturally situated. Just like a car, you drive a car according to the model car that you have. You can't drive an old Morris Minor like you would an MG. The body, in one, that doesn't change. So even though we may become elevated in consciousness, the body's still the same body, and it may actually be suited to a certain type of work, the body, but now it's work in transcendental consciousness. But in some cases, it may actually be suitable to change the type of work that one is doing from Sudra to Vaishya to Brahmana according to the what is more suitable. Any questions on this? Yep.
This one actually, Srila Prabhupada says that we are making the Brahmana sacred from the whole people. It is building up the actual Brahmanas. So what is my question is, in general, the general people may belong to some caste or some order, may not be Brahmana at all, maybe the Shudra, maybe somewhere else. So when it is created like that, then the 47th verse which we are reading over here, that one should, it is better to engage in one's own occupation, even though one is performing imperfectly. So are we able to do that? Then now ISKCON is making me a flexible way to become a Brahmana. So this particular is contradicting, or how should I understand it?
No, Srila Prabhupada several times, especially after he saw that he was giving Brahminical initiation and they weren't following, he stated in many letters and lectures and in part of his books that not everyone needs to become a Brahmana. And he said, those who are not qualified, they can work on the farms and, or they can, according to what they're doing. And Prabhupada didn't expect everyone to become a Brahmana. But in saying that, there must be some Brahmanas. There must be some Brahmanas. But he didn't expect everyone to become a Brahmana. And ISKCON is not trying to make everyone a Brahmana. That's artificial.
So only those people who have the quality of a Brahmana are becoming devotees? And then they will get initiated.
To become a devotee, you must at least have the quality of a Brahmana, yes. It doesn't mean you're working like a Brahmana. That means, because you must have the qualifications of a Brahmana, it doesn't mean that you take an initiation as a Brahmana. The qualifications doesn't mean you take an initiation of a Brahmana and you've taken up those Brahminical activities of worshipping the deities, teaching and studying Shastra and performing yajnas. You may have the qualities of a Brahmana and be training the bullocks up on the farm or working as a businessman. The qualities of a Brahmana means that every devotee, to be a devotee, you must control your mind and senses. In other words, you know, the Vaishnava platform is above the mode of goodness, therefore you must at least have the mode of goodness. That's the qualities of a Brahman. There must be mind and sense control, there must be realization that you're a spirit soul and not the body. We come to this, you know, ultimately every Brahmana is supposed to understand that they're the spirit soul. Not everyone will be fully realized in that as a Brahmana, but they should at least understand it intellectually. Those who have full realization, of course, come to the Brahma Buddha platform. But every devotee, in order to perform pure devotional service, must understand that they're not this body and that they're a spirit soul. If they don't have that understanding, now that's the understanding of a Brahmana, one in the mode of goodness, if they don't have that understanding, they will have another designation. And according to that other designation, they will engage in a service according to that designation. The pure devotional service is described as when one is free from all designations, then one can take up the service of the Lord, pure devotional service. As long as one has designations, they cannot perform pure devotional service. So that is the minimum designation, that I'm not this body, I am spirit soul, as a minimum understanding to be a devotee. Without that, if one thinks one's the body and doesn't have realization of the spirit soul, how can they take up devotional service, which is the activity of one who understands I'm the spirit soul servant of the Lord? And if one wants to serve the Lord with that understanding, how is it possible to serve the Lord if there's no control of the mind and senses, that one instead serves lust and greed and anger? How can you serve the Lord if we're serving lust, greed and anger? One must have. So these the qualification, the mode of goodness is minimum. That's included you know, in the Vaishnava. For instance, if you go to law school, it is understood you've been to primary school and you've graduated from secondary school. Otherwise, there's no admittance into law school. Right? Brahmana position is secondary school, that is graduation. Then that allows you to take up devotional service. You see? You can't get into law school without being a graduate. You can't be a devotee without coming to the mode of goodness first. That is graduate. But that graduate who comes to the mode of goodness, as I said, they may still be working, you know, in what appears to be the work of a Sudra, Vaishya or Kshatriya, according to the body that they have. It may be more suitable, you know, to continue a particular type of work that they're suited for. But because their consciousness is now elevated to Krishna consciousness, the smoky part of that work, the impure part of that work, has been removed and only the pure fiery part remains. Okay.
So this 40,000 verse is for general public, not for the people who are aspiring to become devotees.
Well, you can take it in this way, that it's better to engage in your own duty. So once one is elevated to the platform of a devotee, they should engage, it's better to engage in their activities, their duties as a devotee, and not others' duties.
No,
for instance. So therefore a devotee will take it in that way. For instance, one who is elevated to devotional service, they may be performing the activities of a Brahmana, but they'll only perform those parts which are suitable to devotional service. So they perform their duties suitable to serving Krishna, to devotional service. They perform the activities of a Brahmana, or Vaishya Sudra actually, you know, etc., which are suitable for their platform as a devotee. They don't, just because they may be acting as a Brahmana though, they won't perform other activities that maybe some brahmanas may perform, which are not conducive to devotional service. So therefore they also will not engage in the duties of others. So from whichever platform one is on, whether it be as a devotee or within the Varnashram system, one should perform one's duties and not another's. But in general, it is you know, applying to those in the Varnashram system or others, but a devotee will also take it like that, that it's better to perform my duties as a devotee, as, you know, if you are a Kanishtha Adhikari, you have certain duties. Primarily to take full shelter of the Guru. The Madhyama Adhikari, he has certain duties. To worship the Supreme Lord, make friendship with the devotees, preach to the innocent, avoid, he has certain duties. And the Uttama Adhikari has certain duties. Like that.
You know the story about the appearance of Lord Jagannath and Indrajuna.
Yes.
And looking for him, wanting to serve Lord Jagannath, and then coming across a community of pig farmers, you know, who serve Lord Jagannath, and one family in particular who is a servant, you know, the devoted servant of Lord Jagannath.
No, I don't know that story.
You don't know
that story? No.
Okay. Yeah. Alright, I'm going to talk about it. But it raised so many questions. I read it a long time ago. Yeah, it was one. And then, of course, Brahmana. King Imogen saw his Brahmana married his daughter, the last, because she had been living from poverty. But they were a community of pig farmers.
Right. Yeah.
Who slaughtered pigs.
And they were Brahmins.
They were Sudras.
They were Sudras.
But they worshipped the Jagannath and performed his personal service one time in
the day. Oh, yeah. That's. the other day I heard someone asking on the tape, Srila Prabhupada, can the manufacturers of Coca-Cola, you know, that is a. He's saying that it doesn't do any benefit for anyone in society. How does this, what we're talking about, apply to them? Prabhupada said, yes, the same. And that, you know, if they give their profits, if they're making Coca-Cola and give their profits to Krishna, then they become purified. The same with... even people who are not within the Varnashram, so less engage in activity, even for them, if they actually you know, dedicate their activities towards Krishna, they also become pure. They get the same benefits as those in Varnashram, even though they're completely sinful. And we've actually seen that. We see that practically, that there are some people who, you know, have very sinful professions and very sinful lives, but they come to the temple all the time. We see them every day. And they come along and they put money in the donation box, they buy a book, they eat some prasad, they somehow dedicate just a small percentage of what they're doing to Krishna and the devotees, and they become purified. It applies to everyone. And you know, the we understand, of course, that those who become purified the quickest, and whose purification is more powerful and more intense, are those situated in the mode of goodness. And that's the example of the fire, the pot sitting on the fire. So therefore, we advise no illicit sex, no gambling, no intoxication, no meat eating. Because when people follow that, then the activities they're doing in relationship to Krishna consciousness becomes extremely potent, very quickly, very powerfully purifying, whereas those who don't follow those principles, they're becoming purified. But it is like trying to ignite wet grass or trying to ignite dry grass. Those in the mode of goodness, again we come to the fire example. A fire lit in dry grass will burn very strongly, very brightly with less smoke. A fire lit in wet grass, which means people engaging in a lot of sinful activity, the fire is like very hard to ignite, little fire and a lot of smoke. So to remove the smoky part means gradually removing the sinful activity. But even people engaged in sinful activity, as long as there's some fire of Krishna consciousness, they've got some opportunity. And it's the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas who fan that fire and gradually help to remove the smoky part and make that the little purificatory part of their activities. We try and make that stronger and stronger, and the impure part, we, you know, will automatically, the smoky part will automatically go away. So if a butcher comes, offers $10, gives it into the donation box, by encouraging that donation, that it becomes $100, $100 every week, the butcher part gradually disappears automatically. That's the smoky part.
So does this work also on the principle of human rights by proxy if you give a donation on behalf of someone else?
Yes.
So that someone else becomes very proud of you.
How
does that go wrong?
Yes, because Krishna reciprocates that, you know, if someone is giving a donation on behalf of someone else, then Krishna understands that that person is my devotee and that that devotee is thinking of the welfare of those others, and for the devotees to please his devotee, he therefore benefits those others. So, it means here, of course, that purification means that they're coming to understand their spiritual nature. They're coming to steadiness in jnana, steadiness in knowledge of the self, of their own spiritual nature. That is, the more they become purified, the more they're elevated in knowledge, jnana, iron spirit soul. And the more they have that knowledge, it is the impetus to engage more and more on the platform of the spirit and less on the platform of the body. So again, on text number 49, describes now here we're talking about renunciation, by practice of renunciation. At this stage, when there is, you know, perfection in knowledge of oneself, purification, there is, one can become detached from the results of activities and from the concept of being the doer. One may give up the activities of karma, nice karma yoga. You know, work within the varnashram without attachment to the results of one's activities, and take to the process of jnana, renunciation. Again, we have to remind ourselves of what Krishna taught in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that even when one is satisfied within the self, text number 17, the third chapter, but although one may be satisfied within the self, having realized the self, they have no duty to perform. So that's at this stage. That correlates to this stage here. They may then renounce their activities within the varnashram and be situated on the platform of renunciation, cultivation of transcendental knowledge. But remember that Krishna, in that chapter, he advised Arjuna that still, for the sake of leading others on the right path, one may still perform one's duties. And Krishna explained that he does that. You know, if every elevated person all of a sudden gave up their duties, then everyone would think, well, for me to, you know, to imitate, you know, I'll give up my duties and then I'll be known also as an elevated person. So many elevated persons, for the sake of leading people on the right path, including Krishna, they actually still perform their prescribed duties perfectly in order to guide others. So that is there. Yes.
When you say that after when you perform Nishkama Yoga, that that individual becomes satisfied, does he or she automatically take to some knowledge or transcendental knowledge, or do they have to actually go through Jnana Yoga and Dhyana Yoga and then?
No, they may actually in the verses that are coming up, we see that in the next, from 51 to 53, Krishna describes, by doing these activities on the platform of Jnana Yoga, you come to the Brahma Bhuta stage. Right, so therefore in 51 to 53 it describes one who lives alone in a secluded place, eats little, you know, always in trance on the self, and you know, like that. They're the activities of the jnani. That brings them to the perfection of jnana. So they've got some jnana at the beginning. By practicing this sadhana, they become perfect in that jnana. They get full realization of their spiritual nature. And they're fully, you know, situated on that understanding. Yes, I am spirit soul. There's no concept of the material body that I'm this body. They're fully purified. So some will go from the Nishkama Karma Yoga to the Jnana Yoga, and others, as we said, will still practice their activities as though they were Nishkama Karma Yogis, and but they're practicing it just to keep body and soul together, no longer for any result, and therefore some degree of these activities are also included within their varnashram duties. So, you know, they're eating little, and they're, you know, when there's no need, that they may you know, say they control the body, the mind, the power of speech, they're always in trance, they're free from false pride. So there's two types of people who do that. There are those you see that, for instance, Kshatriyas like Yudhisthira Maharaj and what have you, they were perfectly performing these activities, but engaged as a Kshatriya for the sake of leading the population, right? And then others, some Kshatriyas actually renounced their duty as a Kshatriya and just engaged in these activities. So you can have both. And then there are the devotees, of course, who are not really going through the Karma Yoga or the Jnana Yoga. In one sense, they're actually performing the activities of devotional service to Krishna from the very beginning. Some are like that, they've already passed. Some may, from the karma, you know, nice karma yoga platform, go straight to the platform of understanding, oh, I'm a spirit soul, so yes, I can understand that I'm serving Krishna, and may go straight to the platform of then devotional service. Some may go via the jnana yoga practice. Well, generally when you take up the practice of jnana yoga, it means you take sannyas. Mm-hmm. Yeah. For instance, we have the Varnashram system, so you have the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Brahmanas can take sannyas. Kshatriyas can take vanaprast and practice this. A Brahmana can take sannyas and practice this. A Vaishya, Vaishyas generally practice brahmachari life in the beginning, brahmacharini life, and then grihastha ashram. Vaishyas are more likely to practice, to remain in the grihastha ashram and practice this on a platform of jnana yoga. Whereas a kshatriya might take vanaprastha and practice that, and a brahmana may take sannyas and practice this jnana yoga. A sudra only has one ashram, grihastha. they don't. The sudra only has one ashram, that's it. The grihastha ashram. They don't, you know, do brahmacharya, brahmacharini or anything like that. And therefore, but if they come to this point, again, like the Vaishyas, they may practice jnana yoga as a grihastha.
What exactly are they doing in that
favour
when practicing jnana yoga and have yet come to the stage of knowing Krishna consciousness?
Generally they study the Upanishads and study the nature of the soul, of Brahman, impersonal Brahman, and perhaps some of the jnanis take to jnana yoga, jnana, which is meditation, which is achieved through the Ashtanga yoga practice. So some of the jnana yogis will also take up, you know, as a they will take up meditation on the super soul, and they will study those portions of the Vedas which again give them some realization in that. So you know, the various Upanishads deal with that knowledge of Brahman, Paramatma, so they will study those. They will all whether they're performing activities within Varnashram or not, they still act basically in such a way that they're just maintaining the body and soul together. They don't have any real major desire, material desires to do anything in the material world, and they act, you know, on the platform of beyond attachment and hatred. They control the mind and the senses they're always in trance, always they're not they're studying, but they're also, you know, meditating or you know, in trance means that you know, they're always you know, they fix themselves in that understanding, I am the spirit soul. Some fix themselves in that understanding of the spirit soul and therefore go through all their activities as a businessman or a kshatriya in that understanding. Some of them fix their mind that I am the spirit soul and therefore you know, literally refrain from duties so that they can actually just internally meditate a lot. You know, on the knowledge that they're cultivating, and some of those who take to that internal meditation may use the practice of Astanga Yoga to increase their meditational techniques and even up to the point of understanding the super soul. So, you know, you have sannyasis and vanaprasthas and grihasthas who will practice you know, jnana yoga if they're on that platform, you know, according to whether they agree has to vanaprasa sannyas. And yeah. so one who practices that says such a person has certainly elevated the position of self-realization. So, which is described in verse number 54, that very famous verse, of course, the Brahma Bhut Sanatmana Sochidina Kamchidi. One who is thus transcendently situated once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments or desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state, he attains pure devotional service unto me. so. This is here, as Prabhupada describes, that at this point, as it says, in that state he attains pure devotional service unto me. So this is the perfection of knowledge. Full realization, self-realization of one's spiritual nature. And as we said, one is either still practicing their duties within the Varnashram system, which is highly recommended. One, because we've been conditioned for so many lifetimes, there's a likelihood we can, if we give up our prescribed duties, we can, you know, fall back. As we know, two, of course, one may be performing those prescribed duties to help elevate others and show them the right direction, or you may have those who have actually given up their prescribed duties within the Varnashram, maybe as a, you know, Chachya, Vaishya, you know, sort of what have it, but they'll be engaged in cultivation of, you know, meditation, cultivation of transcendental knowledge, and not so much performing other activities apart from that. but they're all jnanis. They're all, you know, whether they're performing duties with jnana or whether they're not performing duty with jnana, if they have this realization, they can both have that same realization. You know. And at that point, those who have that realization, they can take the pure devotional service, but they may not. Some of them actually remain jnanis. Some of them remain satisfied with that. they may not necessarily be mayavadis, but they desire to understand their own spiritual nature and ultimately become liberated within the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, become one with the impersonal. So they're impersonalists, but not necessarily mayavadis. Whereas others who come to this position and through the association of devotees understand that, as Prabhupada says in the purport there, that, you know, to the impersonalist, achieving the Brahma Buddha stage, becoming one with the Absolute, is the last word. For the personalist, a pure devotee, he has to go still further to be engaged in pure devotional service. Right? And as it says, this means that one who is engaged in pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord is already in a state of liberation called Brahma Buddha, oneness with the Absolute. So they're situated, you know, in pure goodness. So the those who are actually guiding society they're cultivating this transcendental knowledge that, you know, within each living entity, whether they be Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Sudra, there is a spirit soul. And therefore, ultimately, on the spiritual platform, they are all equal. And each member of the Varnashram society who comes to this understanding, whether they, you know, as I said, they may be performing the activities of any of the Varnas, but in transcendental consciousness as a self-realized soul, therefore if to the degree that the society has this realization, they become a classless society on the transcendental platform. Even though that, you know, in a Krishna conscious society, especially, even though they're performing the activities of a Sudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Brahmana, they're actually classless because they have this vision. On the transcendental platform, they're classless, and yet they're maybe engaged in divisions to make society work nicely. without this consciousness, there's no question of having a classless society, because the material divisions are there. Then in text number 55, of course, Krishna says, one can understand me as I am, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, only by devotional service, and when one is in full consciousness of me by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. So then, this is the last stage that as a person has progressed through karma, jnana, to self-realization, and that is the platform on which they can actually engage in pure devotional service. And we can understand that that means that also that to some degree or another, as a you know, as although they may be performing nice karma yoga or jnana yoga, there may be, there is some degree of devotional service there, but it is mixed. Karma misery yoga or jnana misery yoga may be there to some degree. It has to be there to some degree, otherwise they cannot actually achieve this sort of success. Without bhakti, ultimately one will not attain this success, even to this platform. There must be some degree of bhakti. That bhakti means it must be karma misery bhakti, jnana misery bhakti. When one actually comes to this platform, is then able to engage in kevala, or pure bhakti, free from karma, free from jnana, above karma, above jnana, no influences of karma, and they're able to then you know, they will perform activities, duties, just to keep body and soul together, and apart from that they're engaged in the nine processes of devotional service, rather than, you know, engage in activities of Varnashram Dham or activities of a Jnani. So Srila Vishvanatha Chakravarti Thakur describes that there are four types of people, four types of jnanis. Two good, two not so good. Two don't achieve success, they remain in the cycle of birth and death, and two actually become liberated. Now, of the not so good, there are those who think that they can actually practice jnana without any bhakti. They cannot actually achieve liberation. Nor can they achieve success, you know, in jnana. There must be some bhakti there. There are others who understand from the scriptures that there must be an element of bhakti to achieve success, and so they practice bhakti with their jnana, but they feel that when they become to the Brahma Buddha platform, they then give up all traces of bhakti, and they consider that such bhakti is, you know, bhakti to the Lord, they're part of the material process, and therefore they're rejected. It's sort of quite offensive. They also don't achieve success. And the other two, they practice bhakti. One's a jnani who practices a little bit of bhakti so that he can achieve impersonal liberation, and because of that bhakti and that jnana, he achieves impersonal liberation. And the final one is the one who practices the jnana, you know, they have that jnana plus the bhakti, and they, with association of devotees, they then just take up the bhakti part purely and give up the jnana altogether, and they then, that's what Prabhupada is saying here, they realise that this is, you know, the beginning of pure devotional service. I've come to this stage, now I should perfect bhakti. And therefore they are the ones described here that they attain pure devotional service. So there are four different types of jnanis. One will attain pure devotional service. One remains a jnani who achieves impersonal liberation, and two who either don't practice bhakti at all, or who practice it and give it up, they just go back into the cycle of birth and death. So it's not necessary that everyone who comes to this point takes up devotional service, that's the point. But the opportunity is there if they associate with the devotee. So in other words, you know, you see this described throughout the works of the various acharyas and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The karma and jnana and yoga, they bring you to the threshold of bhakti, but they don't lead to bhakti. They don't award bhakti, in other words. Karma, jnana and astanga don't award bhakti. They can bring you to the door of bhakti. It is by association with a devotee that awards bhakti. No? One should not think that as a result of practicing karma or jnana or sangha, I will then naturally progress to bhakti. You will not. It brings you to the point of purification where by the association with the devotee will then divert your attention, and you know, seeing that there's some purification, utilize that knowledge and divert your attention towards bhakti, and you know, bring your attention to the benefits of bhakti, bring your attention to the ultimate goal of going back to the spiritual world in relationship with Krishna, and then by that you know, association with a bhakta, one may be induced to take it up. Just like Sukadeva Goswami, the four Kumaras, they're impersonalists, but they actually come to the point of bhakti. By association.
So this classification of jnani doesn't include Mayavadi, they are separate.
Well, Mayavadis can be included in the ones who actually are jnanis, who either don't ever practice bhakti, consider it completely material, or some Mayavadis actually practice bhakti to some degree and then give it up. So Mayavadis, there can be impersonalists in those two categories and Mayavadis in those two categories.
And is there a class? I heard somewhere there's a classification of Mayavadi by Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives the kind of different levels of Mayavadi. So,
yes, that's there, but that's a long discussion. Yeah. I'd like to just sum up some other point. Any other questions?
The one who said there.
First one practices their jnana with an element of bhakti, with the desire to merge for suyuja, impersonal liberation, and they attain that by dint of that bhakti that awards the success, the result. Without the bhakti, they cannot get it. The other one practices the jnana with bhakti, they come to this level also of self-realization, but then by association with devotees they then take up pure devotional service and give up any desire they may have previously had for impersonal liberation. Now I understand that is better.
And in the second, the wise ones who are the good ones, the one that comes to the state of Brahma-Yuga, aren't they already at a platform where they have enough intelligence to not give up bhakti? Like, how can they come to the state of Brahma-Yuga and then give up bhakti in the state of Brahma-Yuga?
There is if they have been cultivating karma yoga and then jnana yoga over many lifetimes, then they've not really cultivated an understanding of bhakti. They've just been cultivating an understanding of the difference between matter and spirit, how to transcend the modes of material nature, which most of the Varnashrama injunctions are directed. That's been their cultivation of knowledge. They haven't actually cultivated knowledge of what is bhakti and what is Bhagavan. They certainly couldn't cultivate knowledge of what is Bhagavan, because that, as described in text number 55, that's only done when one engages in pure devotional service. There's no possibility of really understanding Bhagavan until one engages in pure devotional service. So, they can cultivate knowledge of Brahman and Paramatma. They can't cultivate knowledge of Bhagavan without being a bhakta. They can't cultivate knowledge of bhakti. Generally, that although that information is there within the scriptures, they're studying it, they tend to not appreciate its significance because they have another motive in studying those scriptures.
Is this from a state in which you just kind of are right above the more material nature, in the sense that nothing good or bad influences you, or is it because you're able to control your mind and senses to an extent that it influences you but you don't respond?
It is the realization of your spiritual nature. One is so the realization is there. In other words, because a person has been practicing control of the mind and senses for many, many lifetimes, they understand that, you know, although I'm not engaged in the bodily platform of life at all, you know, I am blissful, you know, as far as, you know, happy, peaceful, undisturbed by anything in the material world, and yet I'm not trying to compensate for things in the material world. I'm just, you know, as a spirit soul, not engaging in any material activities, there's complete satisfaction and happiness, which is obviously coming from the soul, from my, you know, therefore they're realized in that. And because that bliss of the soul is there, and satisfaction and being undisturbed and unaffected, then, you know, it's realized by practical application. In the beginning, you know, one may theoretically understand that I am not this body, I'm a spirit soul. but when a for instance, you know, in our society, we follow four regular principles. We don't have illicit sex, we don't gamble, we don't take intoxication, we don't you know, eat meat. And yet, although we give up what is considered to be the four pillars of happiness for everyone else, the devotees find that they're still happy and blissful, and therefore they understand that the soul doesn't need those things, so they become realized. So that's practical realization. as one is fixed in that practical realization, then that's a Brahma Buddha platform by practical application. No. Some of them, you know, they have an intellectual understanding, but you know, and they're practicing to, and then as they practice, you know, they gradually become. They see that yes, I've given up. As I said, they practice giving up material activities and material attachment and material enjoyment and what have you. And by practicing that, they see yes, you know, I can perceive that as a spirit soul, I'm completely happy and satisfied, even though there are no material activities which should be, you know. There's nothing material which should be giving me that sense of satisfaction and bliss. Generally, a materialistic person in the bodily concept thinks that I have to do so many material things in order to be satisfied and blissful, and if I don't, I will not be happy and I will not be blissful. The jnani gives up all those things and finds that they're more blissful, more happy, more peaceful, than any, and therefore they practice that and they find, yes, so I am a spirit soul. I can experience it. If I wasn't a spirit soul, then after giving up all the material things, if I was a body, I should be dissatisfied and disturbed, and there should be no happiness at all, because I'm not getting any sense gratification. Right? But the fact that it's the opposite, I'm more happy, more blissful, and that proves that yes, the soul is there and there's happiness coming from the spiritual platform within me. So there's realization by practical application. So that is Brahma Buddha. In our society, we come to the Brahma, one who, you know, follows the four regular principles of life and finds that they're completely happy and satisfied, even though they're not engaged in sense gratification, comes to that Brahma Buddha platform. By chanting Hare Krishna. So, but other jnanis may be at the, you know, they may have an intellectual understanding, but until they put it into practice and see, yes, it really works. Right? That's the difference. There's jnanis who intellectually understand it, but they're yes to practice it and to live on that platform. I'm a spirit soul. I don't need to act on the body. And as they do that, usually over many lifetimes, and they see, yes, I have, you know, I've practiced, you know, living off the bodily platform, and I can perceive spiritual happiness. Yeah. So I'm thoroughly convinced. In the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is described, there are two levels of jnani. Yogi, Arura Ruksha and Yoga Ruda. And Aruruksha means, you know, the yogi who is like the nice karma karma yogi who understands that that they come to the platform where they become free from the attachment to the result of their activity and free from the concept of being the doer. And the Yoga Ruda is this platform of Brahma Bhuta here where they're more elevated because they've realized their spiritual self. That has been described previously. That's the end of time. Any other questions? That was a very important section. So the next section is I know as I went through it it won't take us as long to go through, so we can do that and the last section as well. So we'll finish off in the next lesson, we'll actually finish off the Bhagavad Gita, right? Lesson 6, and I believe that gives us 2 weeks. So next lesson will be Thursday the 13th. We'll finish the Bhagavad Gita. Sunday the 16th and Thursday the 20th, revision. Sunday 23rd, the exam. Okay? But that particular section there that we did, you can see there's a couple of jumps of levels. It's very important to understand, that's a real important section there. The other parts we'll see, they're just summing up the conclusion. So I'm glad we spent a bit more time there. All right, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. See you on Thursday. Thank you all for coming.